We began Dhruva Stuti, the 12 prayers, celebrated prayers of Dhruva Maharaj. And I recounted, we just covered 5 of the 12. So a little quick review of Dhruva's prayers. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, in his personal feature, his Bhagavan feature, from Vaikuntha, or from Sweta Dweep, or wherever he wanted to come from, he came. And the form, that very same form that Dhruva had been seeing in total concentration within his heart, disappeared. And he was startled. And when he opened his eyes, he saw that very same form accompanied by Garuda standing before him, and obeisances, falling like a stick, folded palms, wanting to speak, feeling unable to speak, the Lord understanding his desire, touched him. His body became completely spiritualized, his senses, everything transformed. So we heard then the first of his 12 prayers was glorifying the touch and how that had awakened his senses, as if a body that was dead became alive. And all of his senses became surcharged, especially his sense of speaking, but all of his senses as well. And thus enabling him to do what he's about to do the rest of the 11 prayers. The second of those prayers was appreciating the supremacy of that form, the Bhagavan form before him, in comparison to any other feature of anything. He had that realization. Then he spoke about the Lord's friendship and his giving nature, and how he had given to Brahma, and how he had given to the Kumaras, and how he had given to him because of his kindness, especially kind to his devotees, but his kindness in any case. And he's appreciating his nature, his compassionate giving nature. He then expressed great, profound humility at previously having desired something material from the one who can give anything, everything. And he wanted something that was really dumb. He wanted a kingdom. And he wanted a kingdom better than this one, that one, better than anyone. He wanted the best kingdom. Feeling very embarrassed, repentant, humbled, he had received the greatest thing, but he was feeling very sad that he had expressed himself humility over his previous position. And then the last was special appreciation for the bhakti process, comparative and superlative. And somehow he had gotten this good fortune from the personality of Godhead by the mercy of Narada, which then begins, opens the door for the next set, his prayers. And if you, let's see here. Yeah. We use this little metaphor, the fulcrum of our consciousness. So his consciousness had been lifted because of firm mind, firm faith, and instructions of Narada, and it went into his heart deeply, and he followed with great difficulty, for sure. He says so in these prayers, that he saw the personality of Godhead face to face by his kindness. And the bad qualities that he had previously been carrying, that he's feeling repentant for, were gone. So this, from it's all about me to it's all about Krishna, we're just going to continue because of time. So now these next two prayers, 6 and 7, or in the numbering system of the verse of the chapter, it's 11 and 12. He wants continued association. It's through the association of Narada and his mother that he got to where he got, of course, his effort and that mercy. So he wants the continued association of his devotees. Now, continued association devotees means, he says, it'll help him stay fixed in devotional service. Just some other scriptural references that I particularly like. Three of them. One of them is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Sanatan Goswami, and he's explaining, among other things, how the bhakti process begins, and as we hear, it begins from association with one who is carrying bhakti. And then he gives scriptural references verifying all of that. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, even in the topmost perfected stage, association of devotees is absolutely essential. That means everything in between. So if you're without devotee association, that's a problem. So find some way, electronic or, some modern technology, find a way to get association if you're in a faraway place. Somehow. Regular association. And two additional scriptural references I particularly like. When given the opportunity for asking anything they wanted, Sudama the florist said he just wants to be engaged in devotional service. He wants continued association of devotees and wants friendly relations with all living beings. And another scriptural reference is Maharishi Parikshit, end of Canto 1, Chapter 19. He's making that request also of the sages. So, same set of requests. So it's in Prahlad's prayers too. He wants ongoing association of Narada or devotees like Narada. So it's a theme. It's when you come to that stage, that when you one day come to that stage of pure devotion, and there's no other desire, then this is a desire that's very prominent, association with devotees. And we're going to hear why. So here's text 11. In the different ways that one can receive association of devotees, he wants. And the verse says, "Oh, unlimited Lord, kindly bless me so that I may associate with Bhaktim Muhu Pravahatam Tvayi, great devotees who engage in your transcendental loving service constantly." Those kind of devotees. As the waves of a river constantly flow, such transcendental devotees are completely situated in an uncontaminated state of life. That's a nice aspiration. Want to associate with pure devotees. To stay fixed, because it's a dangerous place, the material world. Padam, padam, yadvi padam, natesham. Even you're in a good protected situation by good association and elevated association. Don't take risks. Stay in good, uncontaminated association somehow, even if it's by sound vibration somehow. Vishwanath paraphrases or glosses this way. Bhakti, composed of hearing and chanting, will not be sweet without proper association. Therefore, Dhruva prays for the association of those who continually perform bhakti. So then, as if there is some doubt, but then he will still have fear of the ocean of suffering caused by samsara, because that's in the next verse. And raising his hands in pride, Dhruva speaks. That's the next prayer. So the ocean of material existence and the ocean of birth and death can be very fierce. I mean, tried to cross over that with a boat. You know, Prabhupada said to the captain of the Jaladuta, said he'd never had such a smooth crossing across the Atlantic, but it was so not smooth that Prabhupada became seasick and had two heart attacks, and it's difficult. I don't know if I would want the profession of working on a cargo ship or any kind of a ship. It's very dangerous. So how to cross that danger? Well, Vishwanath says, "I will overpower the terrible ocean of material life full of countless pains by the strength of that association. Let it come before me. Let us see. Nothing is impossible for me." Very, very confident, courageous. "I will be drunk with tasting the nectar of your qualities and pastimes, the qualities of material life, such as rivalry, ignorance, hatred, cannot make this drunkard suffer." What a way of saying it, huh? "Even death cannot touch the person who has drunk immortal nectar by bhakti produced from association with devotees, one directly meets the Lord. Then one again prays for association with devotees, which is exactly what Dhruva is doing, which is exactly what Prahlad was doing, and so forth, these other scriptural references. Elevated souls know what that advantage is. So, of course, one may have one's favorite personalities, and that's just fine. At the same time, anyone that's carrying that uncontaminated quality of bhakti, their association is most, most valuable. So he writes, this indicates that bhakti in the form of association with devotees is the cause of bhakti, and bhakti is the result of bhakti. Thus, this verse states the opinion of the devotees. He says, saying, so the acharyas speak this, Dhruva is speaking this, there's no discord. So it's extolling the prayer, number 6 out of the 12, is extolling the virtue of devotee association, and for that reason, wishing it again and again and again always. By the process of devotional service, I shall surely be able to cross the nescient ocean of material existence, which is filled with, another metaphor, waves of blazing, fire-like dangers. Before it was the other kind of ocean, now it's the fire-like, blazing dangers. So that other metaphor is exactly Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's metaphor. Bhava maha davagni nirvapanam. This is through the chanting of the holy name. One can get on the other side of the blazing forest fire of material existence. In Sanatan Goswami's Brihat Bhagavatamrita, he makes reference to this same verse in this way. Because the devotees of Vishnu serve him constantly, bhaktim muhu pravahatam, their hearts are completely pure, amalashayanam, and for that reason, they are exalted, mahatam. The association of such Vaishnavas is extremely desirable. So it's in his prayers, desiring that association. Dhruva anticipates, this is Sanatana Goswami, Dhruva anticipates that in the company of Vaishnavas, he will drink the nectar of topics about the Supreme Lord, which will intoxicate him and empower him to cross effortlessly the dangerous ocean of samsara. Previously, he didn't have the idea even of liberation. He didn't have a concept of liberation. And now he's hankering to cross the ocean of material existence, the ocean of samsara, through the association of devotees. That's the boat. So, there's a doubt. Just like our acharyas are really expert in presuming the mind or predicating the mind of a great devotee. And so, well, what about based? It's the first thing that we get before we even have a body. We get a false ego, and then we get a body to match our false ego. And then we do stuff and we accumulate karma, get more bodies, and still resting on false ego. It's the first thing to come, it's the last thing to go. It's very stubborn. But association to devotees can help one overcome the conceptions of I and mine carried within that subtle body of ours. So here's the verse, text 12. Yea, tabja nabha. Shishirata shamasundara. Abja nabha. The abja nabha, the lotus navel. If a person happens to associate with a devotee whose heart always hankers after your lotus feet, seeking always their fragrance, like the four Kumaras, they became bhaktas from Brahmavadis just by the fragrance of the tulsis and the sandalwood anointing the lotus feet of the Lord. They were very attracted to his lotus feet and all things connected. So if one happens to get association of such persons, or those who have association of such persons, such a person is never attached to the material body or in a body relationship to offspring, friends, home, wealth, and wife, which are very, very dear to materialistic persons. Now this is the overly attached, long discussion about you'd be a lousy householder if you didn't have any attachment. There has to be an appropriate, but not excessive attachment or inappropriate attachment, overly attached. So devotees who are attached to the lotus feet of the personality of Godhead they're not overly attached to the body and things connected to the body, like the four Kumaras, wanting such association is Dhruva's wish, because it can take him beyond that I and mine conception. Because in the association of devotees, you do bhajana kriya. In sadhu sangha, you do what devotees do, bhajana kriya. And that takes away these misconceptions, the material contamination effects. Vishwanath in his commentary quotes Sridhar Swami saying the word tu in the verse indicates that these great souls, by fixing themselves in yoga, have given up identification with the body and that which is connected to the body, I and mine. This is the nature of a devotee, since he is nishkam. These wise souls who understand how your maya deludes all human beings render potent loving service to you, who are the source of liberation from birth and death. And then he quotes, this is a verse from Canto 3, Chapter 25. Bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort, just as fire in the stomach digests all that we eat. This is a very important verse. I recommend that you remember where it is and make reference to it as needed for your own spiritual life and when helping others who are struggling with that subtle body thing called the mind. Bhakti alone has the power to dissolve the subtle body. And when the subtle body is dissolved, what's left, you have a spiritual mind, spiritual intelligence, spiritual ego. The eye and mind material is gone and is replaced by the spiritual eye and mind. What's the spiritual eye? I'm Krishna's servant. And what is mine? My service to Krishna. Krishna is mine. That's our connection. I am Krishna's and Krishna's mine. And there's nothing else. I mean, not like Krishna's mine, he's in my pocket and I carry him around and do with him what I like. Not that kind of mine. But my relationship with Krishna is mine. My service to Krishna is mine. And then that makes up so many other things. And so instead of it's my paraphernalia, it's that which is for Krishna's service. It's the spiritual eye and mind. Bhakti alone can do that. This is Kapila's teaching. Very important. Dissolve the material mind instead of struggling with it. It's just a further explanation of mam evaye prapadyante. One can easily cross beyond the struggle of material existence because the instrument of the struggle, the mind, the subtle body, is dissolved. So what's there to struggle with? That's resting upon I want to enjoy separately instead of I want to enjoy in relation. I want to be in my relationship with Krishna. That's mine. My relationship with Krishna. No one can take it away. Again, Vishwanath, these wise souls who understand how your Maya deludes all human beings, render potent service. This is what we read this before. So that was from the previous verse. Now Vishwanath is saying, while he's understanding this, Vishnu is wondering, really? If you understand all this, then you know. Then why did you worship the Lord with a desire for a position greater than that attained by your forefathers? You understand the devotee association can take you beyond eye and mind. You understand that. So why did you have the eye and mind thing going on before? And Dhruva's answer is, I pray to have that association of your devotees because they help me to go beyond my material conceptions. I wouldn't be beyond those. I wouldn't understand what I understand today if it weren't for the devotee association, and I want to stay there. Thank you. Very wise. Prabhupada's explanation. We are used to hearing this. Gyanis, they have their I want. They get attached to knowledge and their material conception of transcendence. The yogis get attached to practice and mystic perfection. The bhaktas get attached to Krishna. So this is the going from it's all about me to it's all about Krishna. And the it's all about me conception is dissolved by the bhakti process. That's the message we're hearing. So he's praying for this bhakti connection to be sustained through bhakta association so he can always be in touch with reality instead of illusion. So now we're going to have a little writing section, so we need the lights on, somebody back there. So we'll go point by point. Somewhere during your lifetime, you probably had some obstacles. Maybe you didn't, but probably you did. So think of some situations, a few. There were some obstacles in your heart. Some unhealthy tendency, some negative thoughts about yourself or some situation or other people. Feeling judged by them, feeling anger towards them, feeling something that you know was not so wholesome. And write it down. Few key words, not the whole deal. Who the persons were, what the situation was. Did you consider sharing that with someone that could help you through that struggle? Someone guiding you, your spiritual master, or something like that? You have your counselor system here in Central New Jersey. Did you go to your counselor? And when you did share that, what happened? Be a little specific. What did you feel? Did you feel you were benefited by that? Checking that tendency, the negative tendency. What happened immediately? You're going to take a little bit of time to write, because this is meant to take this topic and make it internal. And after a week or a month or a year, now, hopefully on the other side, how do you feel you're doing with that same tendency? Clear? And then we're going to ask you to share with somebody. Uh-oh. And you can be general. You don't have to be so specific as what you're going to write down, but as you wish. Whenever you're ready, you find someone and begin to share. A couple more minutes. One more minute, please. Okay, we have to move along. We have 5 more of the 12 prayers to complete. Someone in the back can hit the light. We've just heard 2 verses, 2 prayers, glorifying and praying for devotee association. Prior to that was the exalted position of the bhakti process. Now comes the object of the bhakti process, the personal feature of the Supreme. So there's 4 verses, and you notice number 16 is missing. So number 16 is speaking about the Brahman feature. We're going to hear something very interesting about that. But he's a full-on bhakta. He's a pure devotee, and so naturally he wants to glorify the object of his devotion. So here's how he begins. Previously, I thought this material universe was everything, and now that I've seen your transcendental form, you're everything. So we repose our tendency for service on something temporary if we're not connected with that which is eternal. So that's essentially what he's saying. My dear Lord, O Supreme Unborn, I know that the different varieties of living entities, such as animals, trees, birds, reptiles, demigods, and human beings, are spread throughout the universe, which is caused by the total material energy. It's one of the causes. And I know that they are sometimes manifest and sometimes unmanifest. Now check it out. There's the this and that. Now, next slide comes the Supreme Lord. But I had never before experienced the supreme form I behold as I see you now. Now all kinds of methods of theorizing have come to an end. So Prabhupada's explanation. Dhruva Maharaj here compares his previous state of worldly understanding with his newly awakened perfection of understanding arising due to the presence of the Supreme Lord. So it's a whole new world. A light just went on. The position of a living entity is to render service. And thus he comes to the stage of appreciating the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He engages in the limited service of various forms, trees, reptiles, etc. There's an image of the universal form. Now I know that the Lord's transcendental personal form is above this universal form, and for one who knows his personal form, nothing further remains to be known. That's a Vishwanath paraphrase of what that first of the two verses, or three verses, 13. And here's number 14. Specifically focused now on Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who's the source of Brahma, who's his great-grandfather. My dear Lord, at the end of each millennium, or day of Brahma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Garbhadakshay Vishnu, dissolves everything manifested within the universe. Notice there's a little asterisk there. That means the Bhuvar and Svargaloka, that which you see in the sky, into his belly. He lies down on the lap of Sheshanag. From his navel spreads a golden lotus flower on a stem. And on that lotus, Lord Brahma is created. I can understand that you are the same Supreme Godhead. Remember, he's just a 5-year-old boy. He hasn't studied any Bhagavad Gita's or anything. He's just illumined with transcendental knowledge. I therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So our acharyas explain, he's understood not only there's a source of everything, but there's different aspects to that source of everything. And even in the Vishnu Tattva category, there's different aspects of the Vishnu Tattva category. One is the form of Vishnu that's before him, same one that was in his heart, the Paramatma feature. That's one. Shiradakshayi Vishnu. And that's the form that was standing before him as well as in his heart. Then there's the Maha Vishnu form. Yasyaika Nishvatata Kalavatavalambya. From him comes so many universes from that Mahavishnu, the greatest. Mahavishnu. And then there's the Garbhadakshay Vishnu, and they're all three Vishnus, are one entity, one Vishnu. At the end of each and every millennium, when all the material worlds, that means Bhuvar and Svargaloka, those amongst all of them, are dissolved. Because that's what happens. During the end of the day of Brahma, there's a partial annihilation. And it's described like this in Brihat Bhagavatamrita. There's a long period of drought. So everything becomes dry. And then there's fire in the lower regions. And that fire goes up, 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 and it becomes too hot in Maharloka, so they go to Tapaloka, but everything is burned, and then rains come and it dissolved. The flood. at the end of the day of Brahma. So the living entities are put on Noah's Ark or the boat that Matsya pulled, and one of each kind to preserve the species, and then the flood recedes, and then Brahma gets up in the morning and he does the creation again of those lower planetary systems. That's each day, each morning. So at the end of every millennium, when all the material worlds are dissolved, everything enters into the body of Garbhadakshai Vishnu, who is lying on the lap of Shesha Nag. Another question about the Vishnu Tattva form and what that function is. So he's offering obeisances to Vishnu, all three of them. Now, closure. So that knowledge has been awakened within him. Vishwanath says, Vishnu is saying, well, how do you distinguish me from the jiva? Because I also go to sleep. And his reply is, his sleeping is his chit shakti. It's not our sleeping. Different. Our sleeping is like his sleeping, not his sleeping is like our sleeping. And ours is a perverted reflection of his. So, you're not like the jivas. You're totally different. There's no comparison. And that's the next verse. So this is the Lord who he is taking shelter of, who he wants to serve with all of his senses and his power of speech, and so he speaks as one form of service. Tum Nitya Mukta. You are eternally liberated. Not by the mercy of anyone else, you are eternally liberated. Nitya Mukta. Parishuddha Vibhuddha Atma. The living entity, the jiva, is Ashuddha. But you are Parishuddha. And you're full of knowledge. Well, the jiva is full of ignorance. You're the Supreme Soul. This is Sambandh again, in a form of a prayer. You are changeless. You are the original person. You, Vishnu, are Swayam Bhagavan. There's no other Bhagavan within the jiva category. Triadisha. You are the controller of the three modes. The jiva is controlled by the three modes. Drashta. Stitva. Stitta. So, as Lord Vishnu, you maintain all the affairs of the entire universe, and yet you stand aloof and are not the enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices, and are the enjoyer of the results of, so, Bhoktaram Yagatapasam. You're not jiva. You're above all. You're the one who I am taking shelter of, and you're worthy of that shelter for all these reasons. Here's Vishwanath's gloss. My Lord, by your unbroken transcendental glance, you are the supreme witness of all stages of intellectual activities. You are eternally liberated. Your existence is situated in pure goodness. And you're existent in the Supersoul without change. You are the original personality of Godhead, full with six opulences, and you are eternally the master of the three modes of material nature. Thus, you are always different from the ordinary living entities. As Lord Vishnu, you maintain all the affairs of the entire universe. And yet, you stand aloof and are the enjoyer of the results of all sacrifices. that's 15. We did 13, 14, 15. There's just two left, and now comes this really curious one. He's describing the impersonal Brahman feature in ways that I've never heard before. So if you want to hear something you've never heard before, pay attention. Everyone likes to hear things they never heard before. So here's the text. And he is certainly clear that Vishnu is the source of the Brahmajyoti, but he describes the Brahmajyoti in this way. My dear Lord, in your impersonal manifestation of Brahman, there are always two opposing elements, although it's all one. Knowledge and ignorance. Your multi-energies are continually manifest, but the impersonal Brahman, which is undivided, original, changeless, unlimited, and blissful, is the cause of the material manifestation. Because you are the same impersonal Brahman, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So, particularly curious, could you get the Bhagavatam verse? Open the book. In the purport, in Srila Prabhupada's purport to this text 16, he describes this two opposing elements within the one undivided Brahman. It is said that this impersonal Brahman is the distant realization of the absolute truth. That's just following Vishwanath's commentary we'll see shortly. Although apparently Brahman seems to be devoid of energy, factually it has two different energies working under the headings of knowledge and ignorance. On account of these different energies, there is continually a manifestation of vidya and avidya. Vidya and avidya are very nicely described in Ishopanishad, which we'll also read. It is said there that sometimes, due to avidya or a poor fund of knowledge, one accepts the absolute truth as ultimately impersonal. That's the avidya potency from the Brahman feature. But in fact, the impersonal and personal realizations develop in proportion to the development of devotional service. The more we develop our devotional service, the more closely we approach the absolute truth, which in the beginning, when we realize the absolute truth from a distant place, is manifest as impersonal. And he goes on, people in general who are under the influence of avidya, shakti, or maya, have neither knowledge nor devotion. But when a person who is a little advanced and is therefore called a jnani advances even more, he is in the category of jnana-mishra bhakta, or devotee whose love is mixed with empiric knowledge. When he is still further advanced, he can realize that the absolute truth is a person with multi-energies. An advanced devotee can understand the Lord and his creative energy. So we're moving closer to the vidya potencies. Now, the the two verses in Ishopanishad are texts 9 and 11. Text 9 and 11. Antam tamahak praveshanti ye vidyam upasate tato buya ivate tamo ya ovidyayam rataha. Those who engage in the culture of nescient activities shall enter the darkest region of ignorance. Worse still are those engaged in the culture of so-called knowledge. Vidyam cha vidyam chayas tadvedo bayam saha avidyayam rityam tirtva vidyayam rityam ashnute. Birth and death are Brahman manifestation of the supreme variegatedness of the spiritual world. Such devotees are known as Jnana Mishra Bhaktas. Oh, it started in Prabhupada's purport, excuse me. So here's some image. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes this way. Brahman realization is likened to seeing a destination from a distant place. So I took an image from the internet. Seeing a destination from a distant place. And then you get a little closer. Now, seeing that same destination from a more proximate place, and then you actually enter the place. And that's this Bhagavan feature. So it's the same place, the same feature, just more distant, closer, and up close. A common one that's used in other metaphors, seeing in a distance, you can't tell if something in the distance is a cloud on the horizon or a mountain. You get closer, oh, it's a mountain. And then you get closer, you climb the mountain, and you see the different types of trees and the birds, and you see a little cottage, you go inside, meet the man and his dog, and pat the dog on the head. Oh, Fido, nice to meet you. Then that's personal. And then the localized, and then the impersonal. Is it this? Is it that? So that's Vishwanath's comparison of these three stages of realization. Now the final of Dhruva's prayers, this one, text 17. Another nice image of Dhruva receiving the conch on the forehead from Vishnu. My Lord, O Supreme Lord, you are the supreme personified form of all benediction. Therefore, for one who abides in your devotional service with no other desire, worshiping your lotus feet is better than becoming king or lording it over a kingdom. That is the benediction of worshiping your lotus feet to ignorant devotees like me. You are the causeless, merciful maintainer, just like a cow who takes care of the newly born calf by supplying milk and giving it protection from attack. You're my maintainer and protector. You're my everything. You're my place of shelter. Dhruva is, this is Vishwanath. He's a Rasika Bhakta. Dhruva plays for the sweetness of prema in this verse. Oh Lord, your lotus feet are the highest blessing, the supreme result, more than acquisition of a kingdom. And for whom are you the highest blessing? You are the personification of the Purusharthas for those who worship you without material desire. But the Lord maintains even wretched persons like us who worship you with desires. By giving a little sweetness of your lotus feet, obtained by worship without desire. And what is your reason for giving this mercy? You're just eager to give your mercy, that's all. And it's true. Your lotus feet are the highest goal when worshipped without material desire. Though this is so, O Master, the Lord maintains miserable persons like us who have material desires. And Vishwanath is paraphrasing. Vishnu is considering, because he's a young boy, even though he does not know pure bhakti to me, I will give him a taste of pure bhakti's result. My sweetness. Oh, young boy, it is true. You know my sarup. Though now you are without material desire, I will give you the result that you previously were determined to achieve. Please take it. That's what's coming next, his reply, Vishnu's words. That's tomorrow morning. Sight of the Supreme Lord's transcendental form. Grant the supreme benediction to the devotee. O Supreme Lord, you are the supreme personal form of all benediction. Therefore, one who abides in your devotional service with no other desire, worshipping your lotus feet, is better than becoming king and lording it over a kingdom. That is the benediction of worshipping your lotus feet. This is Jiva Goswami's words. And he's making reference to Sridhar Swami, who writes as follows. This verse should be understood. It's a very important verse. It's spoken of by all of our acharyas, as you can see. My Lord, O Supreme Bhagavan, you are the blissful, supreme, personified form of all benediction, Purusharta Murte. Your lotus feet, Tavapada Padmam, are a more valuable benediction than the benediction of becoming king and lording over a kingdom. One may ask, for whom is this benediction available? The answer is, the supreme benediction is available to one who abides by your devotional service with no other desire, worshipping your lotus feet. That's the end of his prayers. And we'll leave you with this little writing assignment. You can do it now or when you get home or whatever you'd like. Think of some obstacle that's blocking your progress to pure devotion, or an undesirable tendency that you may have, and write a prayer to Krishna. Guru and the Vaishnavas, or your worshipful deity, or as you wish, to help you overcome that unfavorable tendency or some obstacle, something. So turn the light on because we're done here. Those are his celebrated prayers. Again, many commentaries by many acharyas, many paintings connected with this whole pastime, because it's so meaningful and memorable. So let's turn the topic a little bit and see if there's some discussion and your thoughts specific to his prayers, if you like. Yes. Do we have a portable microphone? Yeah. Could somebody up front here?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for the wonderful lecture. I think I have two questions. How is Dhruva Maharaj talking about the glories of devotional service when his own experience he didn't have association of devotees in a sense like how we are having. So how is he able to talk about the glories of devotional service when he has not experienced it himself?
Well, your premise is mistaken because he has experienced it himself. His mother and Narada both directed him to engage in devotional service. Narada gave him the details of how to and supported his devotional service. And he did devotional service. Now, it doesn't look like what you do and what I do. It was the assigned service to him. It was done in the mood of service, Rishikena, Rishikesha. So, like offering articles to the deity and calling the name in his mantra and performing physical austerities. It's, you know, so that was his form of devotional service, appropriate for the age.
Okay, I was meaning more like association of devotees.
But the association of the devotees was his mother and Narada. Now, his father was kind of like a baffled bhakta, but his father's father, Swayambhuva Manu, you know, one can imagine in that royal assembly there were other bhaktas with whom he had association. His father just kind of missed a beat, and his stepmother was, you know, out to lunch. Okay.
And one more question was about the ignorance aspect of the impersonal Brahman. Are we talking ignorance from the
personal feature?
Of the
ignorance of the personal feature. A potency of not being able to discern the personal feature. That's an ignorance. It's a type of ignorance.
Okay, so it is from the perspective of the observer, right?
Yes.
Like not from the perspective of the source, right? Like, so meaning...
Well, there's a potent... I could just read it again. It's hard to elaborate something there's not much commentary about, and I've never heard it before. So it's really hard to, like, what devotees like to do, probe and dissect and put it together and dissect again, put it together and dissect and put... Oh, that's how it works. You know, the technology thing that we're used to. I can't do that because there isn't much commentary to do the dissecting and putting it together. The anatomy of those two things, when something that's undifferentiated, I would have a really hard time doing that exercise. I can only repeat the little bit that is there without taking it apart and putting it together again. It's a potency. It's within the Brahman, undifferentiated Brahman, that does not permit one. It deludes one from seeing the personal feature. Yeah.
I was thinking about that particular verse that was put up regarding the Brahman.
Which one?
That which you just referred to.
Which one? The Ishopanishad
16,
one.
The 4.9.16.
Okay.
I was thinking whether we can understand it this way. So generally when we talk about Brahman, there are three categories of Brahman. There is Jiva Brahman, then there is the
Mahat
Brahman, and then there is the Para Brahman.
Well, so there's Mahat Brahman, total material energy.
So I'm wondering whether in the same verse it's kind of talking about both the Mahat Brahman and the Para Brahman at the same time. When it's referring to the cause, it's referring to the Para Brahman. And when it is talking about the ignorance element, it's referring to the Mahat Brahman feature. I was just thinking about
that. That was really creative. It bounces in my computer system. It doesn't process in my computer system. Because although the term Brahman does apply to those three things, this is specific to the Brahmajyoti, not the Mahad Brahman. Okay. Now, that's my computer system. Now maybe, you know, somewhere our acharyas say exactly what you're saying. And I go, oh, okay. But so far, it doesn't compute because it's specific to... Now, you know, let's keep going with your suggestions. Something like Dhruva saying, you know, the recognizing, it's just one verse, so recognizing Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshai Vishnu, and Shiradakshai Vishnu are one entity variously manifest. It's not, you know, taken apart and put back together. It's just one verse. So, with that view in mind, because these are just a small set of prayers, perhaps that's exactly what is intended by his statement, what you're suggesting. But unless we hear that from the acharyas, I'm a little, like, you know, I'm not sure I want to go there.
Nice.
It's just kind of like, not even pause, just delete it. Yeah.
Thank you. Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. I am very much tempted to say this. During Tattva Sandarbha, Prameya Khanda, when we talked about Brahman and Jiva Goswami gave the Shankaracharya's philosophy and where we had a good discussion about knowledge and ignorance. And there they said that when the knowledge covers, when ignorance covers knowledge, then it is Jiva. And all Vidya was all Brahman.
Yeah, that's a Mayavad idea. That's a Mayavad idea.
Yes, that's the Mayavad idea.
But Dhruva is not a Mayavadi.
Yes, but there the two elements, knowledge and ignorance, was mentioned in Brahman.
In Tattva Sandarbha.
Prameya Khanda.
I'll have to go back and look. You find it and bring, you have the book with you?
Not right now, but at home I do,
okay,
yes.
Okay, but does somebody here have a Tattva Sandarbha in their home? Somebody, they're back there, they have a Tattva Sandarbha. You find it and show it to me, please.
I have the lectures too, I'll find that portion
but
in my phone.
But they have the book. You can find the portion and or they have the book.
Okay.
And or.
Okay.
And you show me.
Okay, yes.
She's like, if I don't get this nailed, 1 month from now she'll be writing the same question. She's not, you know, she's very particular. I like it. It's not like, oh, what's next? It's a nice quality. I'm not making fun. I'm appreciating. So it doesn't have to be tomorrow, but, you know, let's go through this. I'd like to get an answer to the question. It's a nice question. From what you recall, is his suggestion match what is written
no,
in Tattva Sandarbha?
No, but he had a
no,
very good
no.
discussion. He questioned that how can ignorance cover knowledge? We had a good discussion on that.
Okay.
That how can ignorance cover knowledge and becomes a jiva? So I remember that part.
Okay. Let's see what it says. It sounds like what you just now said is Mayavad philosophy.
Yes, it is Shankaracharya's philosophy where Jiva Goswami says that Shankaracharya says this part. So I'm just correlating. Maybe
That's different. That's different. Oh, that's different. Here's Shankara is in Maya. He's teaching a doctrine that's false because his idea is this Brahman that's all there is becomes somehow inexplicably covered by ignorance. And a jiva, there's no such thing as jiva. It's just Brahman covered by ignorance. So remove ignorance, and voila, you're a Brahmin.
Yeah.
That's different. So you don't have to look it up.
Okay. My only intention was to say that there are two elements were mentioned, knowledge and ignorance in Brahman. That was my intention to say.
Okay, fine. Fine. Curiosity salt. Go ahead, back there.
Maharaj, one question related to,
to what?
As you mentioned in the morning, the Dhruva Maharaj, when he was doing the austerity, his Vishnu was present in his heart.
Yes.
So he became purified when the Vishnu was in his heart, or when he actually came in front, that is the time he got purified on it. At what stage it got purified?
He was purified by the meditation upon Vishnu within his heart.
And why it took 6 months?
That's why he appeared before him, because he was purified. He was in the, we're going to hear it tomorrow. He was in the Vasudev state. Vasudev, the pure consciousness state. Correct? You're familiar with the term?
Yes, Prabhu.
So he was in the Vasudev state during his period of meditation. Then some interesting things happened. The universe became choked up. The demigods went to Vishnu. We can't breathe. And so, don't worry, I'll go take care. I'll stop his austerities. Then he stopped his austerities by A and B. He disappeared from his heart and came before him. So then he showed his Vaikuntha form and spoke to him and related to him in the same way. That's not what the Paramatma meditation was. It was more personal. It was special mercy. And he touched his forehead and received the prayers and spoke back to him, and more than just super soul in the heart. So it was a special mercy gesture. But he was already in the Vasudev state. Okay?
Thank you.
Okay, somebody's going to move the microphone around. Okay, go ahead.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, please accept my humble obeisances. Recently we were reading this...
Could you speak into the microphone? It will help.
Yeah, recently we were reading the third canto, 10, 11, 12 chapters. And as you mentioned also, when the partial annihilation happens, till the... heavenly planets, they are destroyed, and above that, for the Maharloka residents move to higher planets.
Tapaloka,
Tapaloka. So, based on what I read, to go to the higher planets, whether we need a spiritual piety or the material piety, based on that we get these different planets. And so, what factor makes them to move from Maharloka to Tapaloka?
It was hot. That was the factor. That was the factor. Yikes, it's too hot. Let's go to Tapaloka. And they said, come on in. Well, you can stay for a while. And then when it cools down, you can go back. Okay, great. And they went back because they liked the Maharloka program when it cooled down. Okay. That's the impetus.
Okay.
They went because they liked. They went away because it was too hot. They went back because they liked.
Means even though they are not qualified, how can they go to the higher planets?
Oh, they got a visa. they know what to do when it gets hot. They get in their vimanas and off they go. And they're entitled to do that. And they know how to do that, and they do that. That's how it happens. But they're not thinking, gee, this looks like a better place than where I was. They want to go to where they were. You know, like us. Right?
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Hare Krishna Maharaj. My question is, you mentioned about the annihilation, and Dhruva Maharaj mentioned the Garbhodakshaya Vishnu.
Yes, he does.
And we also learned that Karanodakshaya Vishnu, Mahavishnu, when he exhales or each pose of his, you know, hair, that each universe comes out, and when he inhales, all the universes goes back to him, and each jivas as well, including everything, at the total annihilation. And here we heard and see that Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, that the total annihilation happens, universes goes to Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And also we hear that...
This is the partial annihilation, right?
The
partial annihilation goes into Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, not total.
Not total, okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yes, I mean, just wanted to...
At the end of, specific, at the end of the day of Brahma. It's in the BBT translation, at the end of the day of Brahma. The term that's used is kalpa, and it's the end of the day of Brahma.
Okay.
That's at night.
Right.
There's a partial devastation. And then there's a partial devastation. Where does everything go? Okay. Then there's the total.
Right. So that comes to the question that, I mean, when we just an example of this universe, the partial annihilation, that this universe consists of 14 planetary system, that Janalok, Tapalok, it's all comes under that one universe.
No. The upper Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Brahmaloka, they're not annihilated. Read Brihad Bhagavatamrita. They are not annihilated. It gets really hot because the lower, the Swargaloka down planets, they're in fire. So that just above Swargaloka is Maharloka. It's hot. Let's get out of here. And they go up. Gets less hot.
Okay.
Is that clear?
Yes. Okay. So there's a partial, we say partial
annihilation. Even where there's a partial annihilation is partial.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what.
Swargaloka down. No, the language used in the Vedas and used in, I learned this from Antardweep, that's in charge of the TOVP, this, the canopy of stars, etc., that which is rotating around Dhruvaloka, because I was asking him all these questions because it's in relation to our chapters. In the heavenly region. And Dhruvaloka is at the topmost of that heavenly region. And then there's, vertically, there's planets above Dhruvaloka, that they're not the ones that are moving. You with me?
Yeah, yes.
Because in other words, they're planets that we can't see.
Right.
And that's called antariksha, beyond that which you can see. That's what it means. But they're there, and the Vedas give us information of those planets. You know, the material scientists go, harumph, humbug, yeah. Garbage. Show me.
Yep.
Come tomorrow morning, we're going to hear some other, you know, you're going to lose your socks and hearing some of the things that our acharyas have to say about Dhruvaloka.
Thank you so much, Mataji.
Yeah. Little controversy. We'll be stirring some controversy tomorrow morning. And you go, what? But it says this, and then it says that. How come? Get ready. Someone back here.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, there was a slide saying that this indicates that bhakti in the form of association with devotees is the cause of bhakti, and bhakti is the result of bhakti. So I wanted to understand, what does it mean when it says bhakti is the result of bhakti?
Well, sure. When Prabhupada says, what's the result of chanting? It's more chanting. Same idea. Bhakti generates bhakti. And when you're engaged in bhakti, you just do bhakti. Forever. Eternally. That's the meaning. Let's do it again. You're looking like, what? So, here's a non-devotee, but inside, dormant, there's bhakti. In the association of a bhakta, bhakti comes out. That's the first one that you know. Bhakti is the cause of bhakti. Then, when someone's engaged in bhakti and they want the association of other bhaktas, what happens? Bhakti. Bhakti forever. That's the meaning. There's not something after bhakti. That's the meaning. Then what? It's like, one of the college students asked this interesting question. You've been speaking about this place of higher consciousness. So when you get there, let's call it it. When you get to it, you got this realization, it isn't really it. You got to have another place and you call it something else instead of it. They said, no. Just go deeper. And it's like an ocean that has no bottom. Even oceans have bottoms, but this is an ocean that doesn't have a bottom. Just keep going deeper and deeper. He said, I got it. He gave me one of these. So, it's bhakti forever. That's what it means. And it's not something afterwards. It's not a bridge to get to something beyond it. Okay, up just in front of you. Go ahead.
In his prayers, Dhruva Maharaj states, now that I have seen your supreme form, I know that you are everything. Now all kinds of methods of theorizing have come to an end. And I feel that Dhruva Maharaj viewing the personal form of the Lord is a very, tangible form of reciprocation.
Yes.
And that kind of reciprocation can negate any kind of doubt.
Yes.
Yes. But because I can't directly see Krishna the way that Dhruva Maharaj was able to, how do I manage my impatience of wanting to know that Krishna is everything without a doubt?
Your ears and your heart. That's your access. It's not the same, and it's the same. That's my answer. Now, it can be accessed in other forms, serving the devotees, worshiping the deity, going to Vrindavan. One of Prabhupada's statements is, if you engage in devotional service for a fortnight in Vrindavan, you'll experience the spiritual world. No, the potency, meaning the potency is there for that. So any one of those five principles without offense can give that experience. We're covered, so we're not, even if there are others that saw the form of Krishna or Ramchandra or Vamana or other forms of the Lord, Nrisingadev, they didn't have the transformation that Dhruva had. Because they were covered. They didn't want to be uncovered. So for us, it's gradual. But, the experience can be the same through any one of those mediums. And generally speaking, it's gradual. Because we're attached to trying to be enjoyers apart from Krishna. And the world of the temporary and finding happiness out there instead of in our relationship with Krishna. Okay? Yeah, two hands and then I think we're going to end.
Guru Maharaj, about the spiritual conception of I and mine, the spiritual conception of I is that I'm a servant of Krishna, but you also talked about the spiritual conception of mind being attached to one's services. And so in that context, I was thinking like whether it is really proper to be attached to one's services, or should
attached
we just
to the relationship of service. It can take this shape, that shape, another shape, but attached to the relationship of service.
Okay. That clarifies. Thank you.
You get the last question. Are you happy?
Yes, Maharaj.
Oh, good.
Thank you very much, Maharaj.
Better be a good question now.
Maharaj, I am, as per my understanding, like Indra was the universal administrator for upper, middle and lower planetary systems.
I didn't know that. He's the king of heaven, but it's not what you said.
Okay, but...
amongst the demigods, he has a special function. Okay.
So I was thinking that he is generally called...
Redo your thinking.
Sure, Maharaj.
Okay. I don't think we should end on that question. Any one more? Right behind you.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. I'm trying to understand the subtle body relationship with the soul. You said that devotional service and bhakti can dissolve subtle body.
I didn't say. Kapila said.
Yeah. So, and like, as the subtle body get dissolved, do we get the spiritual body? And I'm just trying to see the connection.
Spiritual body. You are a spiritual body. The subtle, it's like, you know, when you take a glove off, your hand is there. If you put the glove on, your hand is there. There's a covering. The glove. But when the covering is removed, the hand that's there is what you see instead of the glove. So when you wiggle your fingers, the glove wiggles. But it's because your finger's wiggling. That's why the glove's wiggling. There is spiritual form. It's not like you get one. Like, you know, Black Friday, you go to some place and get a spiritual form. It's already there, is my point.
Yeah, I misunderstood. The subtle body and spiritual body are same, so...
No. The subtle body is a covering. It's one of the coverings of the spiritual form. There is a spiritual form. It's already there. It's not in a matured stage, nor are we tuned into it. We're not even tuned into our spirit soul, but to speak of the form of the spirit soul. But it's there.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Oh. Oh. Go ahead. Give him the microphone. He always has these trick questions.
Is Brihad Bhagavatamrita story, allegory, fantasy, or what is it?
It's all of the above. I asked that question of Gopi Pranadana. And he said, you can see it this way or see it that way. And it's fine. So, it's not myth. It's not fiction. It's a narration that helps us understand, but it's also literal. It's both. That was Gopi's answer. I didn't go further with it, I just accepted it. How about you? You're just going to accept it or you want to go further with it?
You used a different word in a different lecture and I forgot the word. That's why I'm asking this question. You referred to that book in a very different way.
I did?
Yes, you did in a lecture.
Well, it's actual. I remember the lecture. I remember having that understanding and conveying the understanding because it's in the commentary. It's an actual, you know, narration of Jaimini Rishi. Of you know, what he says it is. He's asked to narrate it, and he narrates it. So it's an actual narration. It's not fiction. It's purana. And it's at the same time, it's an explanation of Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's literal. But I probed after having said that some time passed, and I asked Gopi when he was still alive, is it proper to see it this way or that way? And he said both. I see some right next to you, another hand, and then another hand over here, and we're going to end. Can you give him the microphone? Right, yeah.
Dhruv Maharaj seems such a nice example for attentive chanting.
Yeah.
So when I think about the factors that helped him be so attentive, so gratitude
big
is a big one. What are the other factors there? Because you mentioned about determination.
Mind and sense control.
Hmm.
The austerity, that was one of those six things at the first class.
Okay.
That help. So it helps. Voluntary, you know, that doesn't have to be, in our case, extreme, but it was certainly helpful for him, 6 months, gush. So, control of the mind and senses, voluntarily accepting some mind and control senses of activity. So, minimally, the four principles. Minimally. Otherwise, we're not going to realize what he, so. And yet, he had an instruction and he followed it. That's another. Without instruction, do something. But with instruction, you do the same something. It has another potency. Varnashram and Daivi Varnashram under the guidance of different potency. The last question, you get the last question.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is in regard to your answer to Mataji, how to seek Krishna through our ear and heart. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, how we can imbibe that in our, you know, regular sadhana? Because many times what happens, we want to hear, but then we want to hear something particular. Or maybe, you know, I like to just hear kirtan, or I like to hear a particular, preacher's lectures.
Kirtanir, yeah. We probably all have our favorite kirtanirs.
Yeah. So, is it okay, or should we try to, force our mind, okay, no, we should listen this also, and to expand ourselves? Not only kirtan, but the lectures of Maharaj.
My answer is it depends. And it depends on, so, in the beginning, it's advisable hear from one source. Like, you know, in the Bhakti program or in your Bhakti Vriksha program. If you have a new person come in and everybody in the Bhakti Vriksha program starts instructing that person, they're going to go away. So it should be the training in the Bhakti Vriksha group that if you see this person needs some guidance, don't give it. Bring it to the Bhakti Vriksha leader, the Bhakti program leader or whatever the model, the
yes,
context is. So they'll know the right time, the right way, the right, just like that couple that we met.
Yes.
And I said, he's good. He's wise. He's mature. Any questions you have, go to him. But it was out of respect to you, but also to protect them from, you know how it goes. And then it gets confusing, and then they hear this, and then they hear that, and they go, well, which is it, this or that? So in the beginning, it's good to from one source. It's like children. They become attached to mom and dad. It's good. And then people come to the home, and they're hiding behind the leg of mom and dad. And then when they, because they're shy, and then when they, unless they're really social kids, and then they see, you know, they're quite comfortable with, mom and dad are really comfortable with them, so they can treat them like mom and dad. So then the circle starts to expand. So that person who they're accustomed to hearing principally from needs to be tuned into how mature that newer person is. So then you know, when you're very mature, so like, read Prabhupada's books. And if you're Keshava Bharati Maharaj, don't listen to anything other than Prabhupada's recordings and don't read other books. Because he's read other books and he's edited other books, and so, because everything is there. Now, somebody, just like I'm quoting other things, other acharyas and Brihad Bhagavatam, so that's not Prabhupada's books. But where there's fidelity, then it's okay. But the root has to be strong before the branches grow and the roots further spread. So there should be a strong initial foundation. And then, so if those kirtan performers that really inspire you, hear them a lot, because then you get spiritual strength and it goes into the heart. That's good. That's good. And then as maturity goes, it expands. And be careful from whom you hear, as long as, you know, it's within our, you know, those who are faithful to Prabhupada. This is from Keshava Bharati Maharaj. You know him?
I heard about him.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's an interesting person. He said, I forget the number of books. This book, that book, the other book. And I'm now at the stage where I just want to read Prabhupada's books and Gopi Pranadana's books, because everything is, there's so much fidelity to Prabhupada. Although, and he's, it's right. You know, because knowing him personally without details. He edited Shiva Ramaraj's writings. And that's like all kinds of interesting things. He just wants to read Prabhupada's books. So, that's a strong root. And part of it is his nourishment of bhakti, but it's also setting an example for, he's got a little bhakti program going there in Houston, and there's like 15 bhaktas, or some number. And it comes and it goes because young Western people come and go. But it's a strong root. That's the training they're getting from him. And he does it himself. So they see he does it himself so many hours a day. So there's other, so now for you, you know, you have a strong root too. And so you can be you're not going to go away from that root. And if something doesn't match it, you just like, you know, it goes over there. You don't touch it anymore.
Yes. Yes, Maharaj. Thank you.
And so how you do will help train the people that are in your Bhakti Vriksha group. You make references. Anyway, you get the idea. I hope I didn't step on anybody's toes by giving that answer. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.